All right, guys, welcome to Property Profits Podcast. I'm your host, Bryce Kaminsky, filling in for Dave Dubois. And if you've ever been curious about overcoming real estate setbacks and turning them into success, my guest today, Donna Hook, did just that. From unexpected property challenges to legal battles, she's been through it all and emerged stronger. Stay tuned tonight, guys. Let's learn from Donna's journey and get some insights. Donna, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me here. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, no problem. It's my pleasure. Anyone who's been in the business as long as you, I'm dying to hear your story. So let's go right back to the beginning. You'd mentioned that you got started in, I believe it was 2004, correct?
That is correct.
So tell me about why and what was real estate like in 2004?
Okay, sure. So almost... Yeah, what is it? 20 years.
About 20 years, yeah, about 20 years.
Yeah, it's going on 20 years. Okay, so back in 2004, you know, the house prices were much lower than they are now, and my husband and I had always had an interest in real estate. His parents owned some rental property. My parents were both at different times in their career real estate agents. Yeah, so real estate was just kind of in our blood. And so we had been to some of the early seminars with like Russ Whitney, Robert Allen, and then, you know, we tried to buy some properties, but we were always bought out by someone with more creative financing. And so finally, I was sitting at work one day and this consultant came over and he handed me this book. Like, he's like, oh, you got to read this, right? And it turned out it was the Rich Dad, Poor Dad book.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, it's they call it the Purple Bible in many circles, right? So
yeah, it converts a lot of people.
It does. And there was a line in there that said, you know, the rich invest and the poor work for a living. And I'm like, I think I know what side of that equation I want to be on.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was able to. I had some stock options that I was able to sell. And then I also hired a tax strategist and they had us convert some money into a self-directed IRAs where we were able to invest in real estate. And because we were so green, we listened to an opportunity they had with another real estate guru at the time. And the idea was that, you know, he'll give us a 15% ROI annually if we put up the cash. And the strategy that he was using was lease options. So yeah, people would come, rent, and then buy. Well, it worked for a couple of years, but then the 2008 crash hit. Wasn't impacted right away, but in 2010, you know, all of a sudden we get this call from Bank of America, right? And they're like, your mortgage is late. We're like, what? We don't have a mortgage with Bank of America. What are you talking about? Right. Well, because he was managing all of the property, you know, apparently when they did the conversion from Countrywide over to Bank of America, he had gotten noticed, but we weren't aware. So then they started naming addresses. And we're like, oh, interesting. So because our guru partner wasn't paying our mortgage, my credit was taking a hit.
Yeah.
And then one day, you know, like I would call and they'd pay late and it would go on for a few months, but I was getting a little frustrated. So, you know, I called to talk to him. And 2 days later, while I'm sitting at work, we had purchased 5 properties with them. And he calls and goes, I'm done. Goodbye. I'm like, what? What? He hands us 5 properties in one day, 5 more mortgages on top of our own property. And the irony is that, you know, only 2 of the properties were rented. The other 3 were not. So I don't know, you know, obviously he wasn't that great at management and his contract never had any provisions for repairs. So he had been paying us a 15% ROI. We got back 17,000 out of 35,000 that we had put down. It was $5,000 down for each property and we mortgaged the rest. But you know, it was an interesting time because just 24 hours earlier, I had gotten call from my Florida attorney that a property we had there had gone through a short sale and was finished. So we had another partner, and we actually had three partners, and one after the other was just kind of a disaster. So they all, in a way, they all walked away. They all walked away and left us holding the financial bag. So it took us a long time, like a almost a decade, to undo this. And in the meantime, our second partner that we had sold her a property on contract for deed, and it turns out that she stopped paying the mortgage and wouldn't leave the property. And even after we talked to the title company, we found out that she had signed the property, the contract illegally, because it said the property would remain unencumbered. And yet, when she finally left, there were seven liens on the property. So I'm at work calling lawyers, five different lawyers, seven liens, five different lawyers, and I'm negotiating. Like, I'm offering them 10% on the dollar, and most of them took it. It took a few months to get that through. And I talked to my lawyer, and he's just like, "I don't believe you did that. I don't even know anybody who could have got that done." So, I
Yeah, if
just
you're
didn't feel like I had
persistent,
a
right?
choice. Yeah, you just sometimes you just got to run through things, like run through the
Well,
wall to
everybody
make
else
it
seemed
happen.
to, in that story, everyone else seemed to have a choice except the person stuck holding the bag, which was you. And you didn't really have a choice. You had to make those calls and negotiate the way out because no one was coming to save you. So after those partnerships, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that partnerships weren't really high up on your priority list. You started probably working on real estate yourself more directly.
After those partnerships, it was quite a long period, actually. It took 10 years to really un well, it wasn't until 2001 that we finally rid ourselves of those three partnerships. So it was really a long time. In the process, we also got sued by a PMI company because one of our partners, we had built a house, and when we transferred from the construction loan over to the fixed mortgage, we hadn't put 20% down. And so after the crash of 2008, our you couldn't the house dropped $180,000 in value. We
Oh,
couldn't
wow.
get it rented for what it was worth, and we had maxed out our home equity. So I had talked to another real estate investor who was having similar issues, and he told me about a strategic default, which is a very difficult decision, but it's a decision where you purposefully stop paying the mortgage. And I had tried to do another short sale with the bank, and after 2 years, they send you this one line that says rejected, no explanation, no nothing. So I had to hire an attorney, and that's when I found out the PMI company's like, "Oh, you have too many assets. We're not letting you off the hook." So it took another 4 or 5 years, and we got sued and we lost. And so that's what ended in 2001. So, yes, I was like, all done. So I wasn't thinking about buying more real estate or anything at that point. I was like, very heads down, like, I got to pay down this debt. I just wanted to be able to breathe again, and so finally we got all of the debt paid off, the home equity and our own house. And so we then we were like in COVID, right? So I was watching TV, and I remember watching a television show called Undercover Billionaire. Have you seen it? And the second season, which had Grant Cardone on there, I'm like, who the heck is this guy? Right? He's interesting to me. So I followed up and found out that he had a real estate summit coming up in December of 2021. So I decided to go, and that's when my interest in commercial real estate started, because that's what he's all about. So, partners, I took a brief pause, but I'm doing partnership differently. I really want to understand what my partners are about, what they're invested in, what they believe in. I'm not just going to be as gung-ho. And that was like one of my early mistakes because, I was so eager to get into real estate. I was like acting on emotion instead of logic and reason. I was like, yeah, let's buy everything. We bought land, we had houses built. We had partners that just made no sense logically when you step back and think about it. So,
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing. I was with a mentorship. I went to a mentorship event, and the guy says, "Failure, we don't actually ever fail because we all make the best decisions that we're, in the moment, we make the best decision with the information we have available." So it's really just that we learn how not to do that again. So it looks like you've navigated that, and now you're focused on the commercial side of things, which is like the either commercial buildings or larger multifamily properties. How's that going?
Yeah, so within the last month, we got involved as a GP on a 30 unit in Las Vegas and an industrial property in North Carolina. So these are our first forays into commercial real estate. I know that there's a bit of a hold period, like to build up the reserves. So they will cash flow, just not for maybe 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, they
So
got to
we're
stabilize it,
waiting.
right?
Yeah, that's pretty standard in the industry now. So people would rather, have that reserve than have a capital call later, which is basically having the GPs come back and ask for more money. Yeah.
So what are you doing right now as far as funding these deals? Where are you finding the capital? How are you raising the money?
Okay, well, relationships really is one of the biggest things. So one way that I got in the deals was being able to actually trade my time for opportunity. So in one case, my mentor and partner, he runs a class, and so I agreed to create PowerPoints for him and of his trainings. And so I was able to get in at a generally lower cost. And another partner of mine, similarly, like I'm recording his journey. So there are ways to get into these deals with lower capital if you put yourself out there. I've been doing this for, more than a year now, and the deal's just closed. So, but in terms of raising capital, there's a number of different ways that you can look at it, right? So one thing that I like to focus on is storytelling, because first, it's really important to understand where you're at. If you're a new investor and you don't have a story, your story is going to be very, very different than somebody that has an experience, right? So they can say, like, depending on their thesis, but let's say, you're all about ESG, environmental sustainable governance. You can talk about the things that your property does. Oh, we put solar on our roofs and we saved this kind of money and, it helped us generate this kind of income. And so you can tell a story. My mentor got access to 50,000 accredited investors just by sharing his vision, his long-term vision. He wants to be the guy in downtown Vegas, to build out downtown Vegas to take over the Tony Hsieh Legacy Fund. So a lot of it is really understanding what you have to share and then building the relationships long term. I did, raise capital through a long-term relationship, and one of the reasons I was able to do it was because I was helping this person problem solve. They had a piece of property that had, like, I don't know, an RV kind of situation on it, and it was getting trashed. And we just talked about different creative ways at which we could sell it. and he found a buyer, and then he had the money to invest in the deal. So that's some of the things that I'm doing.
So what have you found to be one of the more effective ways to keep in touch with the people that, your investor prospects?
Yeah, so one of the things that my husband and I do is we run this monthly master class called Hook Up with Real Estate. So I keep in touch by offering free education to people. It builds credibility, it builds that know, like, and trust factor. And if there is a deal, they know that I'm serious about real estate and that I can share, the specifics of the deal.
So when you're talking to new investors, how do you present that deal to a possible investor that, how do you go about doing that?
Yeah, I think it's important to understand what their interest is. Like, do they have money to invest? How much money do they have to invest? It's important to understand what their needs are. Like, some people want to leave a legacy. They want to have generational wealth. Other people want, tax deferred. Other people want to have diversity. So it's important to do a lot of listening and asking questions to figure out, where does this person want to be? What is their goals? And then to figure out how best you can help them, because not every property will cash flow. Let's say that's your thing. You want a property that cash flows, and somebody else might just want tax deferred properties. They need to cut their taxes. So, really asking questions, understanding what people want, and then sharing, what the deals that you have that support that, as well as the stories, your own stories. Say, well, this is a person that I trust because this reason, that reason, that reason. Right now I'm not finding my own deals. I'm just partnering with people who are finding the deals and bringing investors to them.
Yeah, so you'd mentioned before the show that you're also an author. You've authored in a real estate book. Tell me more about
Yes.
that.
So this book here, Real Women in Real Estate, it just launched on August 1st, and I have one chapter in 27, so it goes much more in depth into my story, about my partnerships and where I am now and my journey. And it's an exciting time. Like, part of the reason that I wanted to write this book is because I did have those failed partnerships. I felt very vulnerable. I felt like, oh, I made so many mistakes, and that's what our mission is. Our mission is to help aspiring and early investors, to have knowledge and skills so they can confidently invest while simultaneously avoiding, those costly mistakes like the kind that we made early on. So I
Yeah,
think
getting
people understand that vision of mine, and they trust that, I'm not there just for their money. I want them to really understand, because I made so many mistakes and it cost me so much money. But after that, I met someone who lost $50 million in 2008. Another guy lost $77 million in 2008. It's not funny, and it really took their toll on them, but as it did me. But they're still very bullish on real estate, as I am. And yeah, they just believe, like, there's opportunity there. And so, but I want people to be el educated and understand what they're getting into and who they're
There's a
partnering
risk,
with.
yeah, there's definitely like a risk and reward equation that's happening because typically if the risk is low, the reward is typically low. And so with real estate, the risk is relative, not, I wouldn't say it's relatively high, but for you to have the rewards that real estate brings, there is a certain amount of risk. I've found it, especially from interviewing people, it seems to be about how you mitigate the risks, not that they don't exist. but that, like, how do you plan to handle the risks that may occur during the deal? So in these larger multi-units, what are you guys doing to kind of mitigate the risk involved with investing with you?
Yeah. So that's a really, really important point because what I found out through my partnerships early on is that my best partner is my husband because he and I have this figure it out mentality, but our other partners didn't. So that's one thing that I look for is like people who are going to find they're going to go over it, they're going to go around it, they're going to go through it and try to figure out, or they're going to go under it, how to get to the other side, because there are a lot of people that don't have the experience or don't have the fortitude to figure out how to address a problem. So partnership selection is one thing. This deal that I was telling you about in Las Vegas, there were incredible challenges, and I just saw like how broad my the lead manager their shoulders were because he just shouldered so many different challenges. Like he had a closing date from agency debt Fannie Freddie, I forget which, but and then like 3 days later they said, oh, we're backing out. So he had to figure out how to get new debt, in a very short period of time. He could have just said, "Oh, the deal's done," but he didn't. He's like, "I'm making this happen, and I'm gonna figure it out." So, in some level, it's who you partner with,
Oh, yeah. Well, certainly it seems like partnering with people that share the same attitude has really benefited you this time around.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And they are more seasoned than me, so it's also about education. It's easy just to throw money at something and then, let somebody else be responsible for it. But, if it's your money, you have to be responsible for it. And that's another important lesson that I learned early on is like you have to run your real estate as a business. People will walk all over you if you don't.
Oh,
So.
definitely. I remember my mentor said to me, he said, more money has been lost through leverage than anything else. And so, definitely, take it by the horns. And I like what you're saying is that you got to figure it out, go over it, go under it, go around it. And I always say this to anyone who has teaching is like, the only time you lose in real estate is when you quit. If you can unbury yourself and continue on and continue on, real estate will be here after we're gone and buried. Real estate will continue. It was here before we were born. It'll be here after we're gone. And so it just matter like, can you participate? How long can you participate in the game? And maybe it's your entire lifetime. So I really appreciate the insights and, the story of you figured it out. And if people want to find out more, they want to get to know you, they want to connect with you guys, figure out what you're up to these days, what should they do?
Okay, so we have a YouTube channel. So youtube.com/ the @ hookup with real estate, all one word, play off our name. We also have a Facebook group, so it's groups/ hookup with real estate. You can connect to me on LinkedIn right now. It's the easiest, Donna Hook. And one thing that you just said reminded me that, where was I going with this? Pushing through, you have to have a reserve. That's the other thing. That's a very important lesson for people to have. If we didn't have availability to our home equity, I'm not sure what we would have done. My husband had to spend money to fix up properties. We, needed it to pay taxes. There was a lot of different reasons we needed a reserve. And so I want to encourage everybody as well to,
Yeah, don't spend
save
all your
some
cash
capital.
flow. Yeah, don't spend all your cash flow. Make a reserve, rainy day funds, whatever you want to call it, because you never know when that furnace is going to go or when the tenant finally moves out and they've been telling you year over year that Oh, everything's working fine. Everything's fine. And you move out, they move out and you do your inspection, or maybe they move out in the middle of the night and you do your inspection. You're like, not everything is fine. Looks like we're going to have to bring some cash to this thing. So, yeah, great piece of advice. And yeah, definitely I'm going to be checking out. Where do we find the book before we wrap the show here?
Oh,
Where
it's
can we
on
get the book?
Amazon, Real Women in Real Estate. You can just buy it. It's like $2.99 on Kindle, or if you want, I can send a signed copy for $17. I'll mail it to you.
There you go. There you go. Well,
Soft copy.
I really appreciate the time, Donna. And yeah, until next time, guys, we'll catch you on the next episode.
Thank you very much. Bye bye.